Hello and welcome back. Once again, we are going to be talking about Blitz Scalable Deals for August 2022. I am joined, as I usually am, by my partner at Blitz Scaling Ventures, Scott Johnson. Scott, how did August 2022 look?
It was a slight uptick, Chris, from July. It was still low, though, right? We weren't in the hundreds at all in deal count for the firms that we follow. So it was 65 in July. We went up to 85 in August, tracking towards about 80 in September, it looks like maybe. So we are in a new normal, and that new normal is in that 70 to 80 range, I think, 70 to 90 range, sort of in there. We'll see if we break out of that anytime soon. But for now, I think that's kind of what we should expect. And as a result, last month we had, several decent deals to talk about. This month we only had a single deal that cleared our hurdle of scoring 80 points on our Blitzscaling scoring system. So one single deal is actually well below average. We usually see three, four, five, six, seven sometimes, but this month, not so much. And remember, these are announced deals. So the actual deal closed maybe in August, maybe in July, and it didn't get announced till August. That means a term sheet probably hit back in June or July. So significant lag here in the data. And we're seeing kind of what happened over the summer as much as what really happened in the early summer and sort of midsummer. And September is probably more looking at August activity. And so we won't really see what's happening in September until October's numbers start coming in. So I wanted to set that context so people can understand that time lag and what these numbers might mean. Can't be sure for sure. Like, I don't have an actual closing date for each. This is just announcement dates. So that's the numbers. And the deal that did clear the hurdle, let's do that one first. It's called Incredible Health. And we've seen a lot of deals like this before where it's a job board, right? So job boards are Blitzscalers quite often if they are addressing a market that is large enough. And in this case, Incredible Health is in the health market, particularly the nursing market. And they raised an $80 million Series B. Base 10 Partners was the lead. And there are a lot of prior investors in there, including who's the investor that we followed? Andreessen is in there. So that's the deal summary. And Chris, what do they do? I mean, they have a job board, but what's that mean?
Sure. So the thing about a job board, and the reason why it is often very interesting from a blitz scaling perspective, is because it has classic two-sided marketplace network effect dynamics. So if you think about it, if you have a job board, the job seekers will want to go where the jobs are listed, and the job listers are going to want to go where the job seekers are looking. And this is the thing that powers disparate but incredibly valuable businesses like Craigslist, which generates most of its money off of job board listings, and LinkedIn, which of course in the end makes most of its money off of the recruiter product, which people use to find job candidates, but really takes on a lot of those job board characteristics as well. So that's why this is very interesting. Now, the thing is, if you're going to create some sort of job board, you have to answer the question, why is this going to be better than Craigslist? Or why is this going to be better than LinkedIn? Or how come this is not something that LinkedIn is going to do? Because LinkedIn is an enormously powerful company that is a part of an even more powerful company, Microsoft. And in the case of Incredible Health, the answer is it's specialized in an area where it really makes sense, which is to say, nursing jobs. And because it's a nursing job, because it's designed just for nursing jobs, it's possible for Incredible Health to get much more granular with the kinds of skills that people have. And I've not been a healthcare professional, but I imagine as you're looking for nurses to fill roles, knowing which kinds of conditions they work with and what kinds of skills they have is going to be very important in getting the right people in. And as you may remember from our many discussions of two-sided marketplaces and which ones tend to have stronger network effects, the more that selection matters, the more that there's differentiation between the various potential options in the marketplace, the better it is. And in the case of a job board, there's a lot of differentiation. Not only is there differentiation around the nurses and the skills they have and the previous ratings and things like that, but there's differentiation among the gigs in terms of what is the nature of the nursing job and where is it located and for how long and so on and so forth. So for all these reasons, we're very excited. It's got a strong winner-take-most market dynamic because of all that differentiation. So a classic 10 out of 10. The distribution is good, but not great. So it's not inherently viral, but there is good word of mouth. Nurses obviously talk with each other. They're always working with each other. So there's general awareness of this. So we gave them an 8 out of 10 on distribution, which is good, but not great. And then if we go on to the other things, well, actually, let's think about product market fit. This is a very classic business model, a very classic product, and it's been customized for this market. They're pretty far along. They've raised a lot of money. They had tremendous traction. So we gave them high marks, 9 out of 10. And then market size, obviously, healthcare is an enormous market, and nursing is a highly in-demand skill. So that's 10 out of 10 as far as the market size goes. But there's still some imperfections. The job board is not as smooth as a social network. So in terms of gross margin, well, you got to do a bunch of work to make sure you validate the skills as opposed to just being a Craigslist where people can say whatever the hell they want. So we gave them a 9 out of 10 there. And the scalability of the org and the operations, there is some handholding involved, there's some people involved, and so we gave them an 8 for org scalability and 9 for operation scalability. Those make them a little bit less scalable than, say, a social network, but it still comes in at an 83, a very solid score.
Yeah, so remember 80 is our cutoff. So 83 is a really good score. And the only this remember this is the only deal that scored above 80 out of all 85 companies that we looked at this month. So Incredible Health is certainly interesting to us, but we don't want to just end the podcast now. There's some other interesting companies that almost made the cut. And the one that came the closest is a company called Sphere. And it is a place where experts can record a lesson. So if you know a whole lot about product development or marketing to consumers or whatever, you're a really seasoned expert at that, and you have thought about it deeply and want to communicate something important to people who might want to learn about that job and develop better skills, you can create a class, and then people can take those classes and pay for them. And it's so Sphere is where the instructors meet the people who want to learn. It's a seed deal, $4 million seed deal, and Felicis led it, and we have a tremendous respect for Felicis. And if you want to check out the company, it's at getsphere.com. So that's GETSPHERE.com. It's in San Francisco. And what do you think of this one, Chris?
Well, this is one that, as you heard, we really like. Not quite enough to make it across the 80 threshold, but it actually comes in, spoiler alert, at 79. And a 79 is actually a high enough score that we probably will actually investigate further. Because when we investigate further, sometimes we discover that we've underestimated them on some mark, perhaps product market fit, as we'll get to in a second. And it actually should be ranked higher and scored higher and therefore make the threshold. So
Yeah,
with
maybe it's
Sphere,
more viral than we think. Maybe the gross margins are better. We've knocked it down, particularly in product market fit. And Chris, I was wondering just today, it's like, should we have a provisional score that just assumes someday they'll have perfect product market fit, and therefore we should pay extra attention to the companies that would have gotten an 80 except for that? Or does it make sense to just have the cutoff be 80 and wait till they're achieved that product market fit? So that's a sort of an open question for us.
That is a great point. And one of the things we may want to do is to add another column in our tracker that calculates the score as if product market fit were a 10 out of 10 or 9 out of 10. Because that you hit the nail on the head. Product market fit is one of the things which you can actually change over time as we get more evidence in. And paying attention to the ones that score well in every other respect. Like if a company is below the line and doesn't, but scores super well on product market fit, well, maturation is not necessarily going to help it that much. And so I think you're on to something. This is exciting stuff because this is the first time you've mentioned it to me. We're actually recording it live, so to speak. So I think that's a great idea.
there's a little window into how our partner meetings go. You know, I was musing about this today as I was driving in my car, and I brought it up, and it's an interesting topic, but probably can't finish that conversation during the podcast. What we can do is score this deal, and winner take most and viral growth are both a 9. How did you arrive at that?
Yes. So the key thing to know about Sphere is it's virtual professional learning. So it's all virtual, but it's professional learning. It's not like classes on the classics or something like that. This is practical stuff that people think will help them in their job. So there is a strong marketplace dynamic of experts and learners. And it is also interesting because not only is it incorporating sort of this creator economy side of letting the instructors create these courses, it's also incorporating the cohort-based learning approach. So that's been so successful for things like Forge Global and more of a hybrid model, where cohort-based learning gathers people together and they take the class at the same time so that they can help sort of support each other, and it helps increase the completion rates. Because as we know, the biggest issue with MOOCs has been the low completion rates. So how well does Sphere do? Well, in terms of winner take most, clearly the instructors are differentiated, are providing different backgrounds. And so you want to learn from somebody who's a known expert. That is a big differentiator. It is not quite a perfect 10 because, again, there could be a lot of people who are SEO experts or a lot of people who are experts on product management or PRD writing or something like that. But it's still very good. And then on the distribution side, the key is that the people who are the instructors are going to send people to Sphere. Now you may say, but why would they do that? Wouldn't they want all the money for themselves? Well, that's the clever part about Sphere. Sphere, unlike a lot of these other places, has oriented themselves as a creator economy company. The experts retain their IP and 80% of the revenues. So Sphere is acting as the facilitator rather than taking this enormous rake. Oftentimes, other platforms, the instructor only gets a small minority of the money. Here, Sphere is giving the instructor the majority. Now, that may slow down their ability to generate revenues in the early days, but it means they're more sustainable because otherwise the instructors would look to leave. As it is, that 20% rake is well within the bounds where somebody would just say, you know, why don't I just keep using this? And why don't I promote this? Because if I send people to Sphere and it's built up a reputation, it makes more sense for me to send people there and convert them rather than try to have them work separately through some sort of cell phone system. So that's why I give 9 and 9, which is a very great start, but they still need to do well to get to 80. And this is where we are still very early, right? We gave them a 7 on product market fit because it's still super early. The intuition is that this cohort-based learning on a virtual basis would allow for greater completion rates, still to be proven. We believe that the lower rake will allow the instructors to stick with it over time, also unproven. So these are things where, because they're unproven, we give them a 7 out of 10 on product market fit.
Yeah, and that knocks them down. And it's sort of a really interesting, both of these are marketplace oriented network effects, right? And it's not enough to just be a marketplace. There are a lot of nuances to every marketplace that cause the scoring to be different and cause the challenges to the business and therefore the risks to the business to be different. And we spend a lot of time thinking about that when we look at these marketplace companies. So when we see a marketplace, we're like, okay, we need to take a closer look at this. But then a lot of times they don't actually meet the test. For one reason or another, they're just not a marketplace where it really is truly a winner take most. And this one, it could be. So, you know, we're definitely going to track this one closely, and we wish them luck. The rest of the scores, do you want to talk about them, Chris?
We don't have to go through the detailed scoring of these, but we should mention two other companies that we thought were interesting. The first one is a company called Vetted that failed to make our list primarily because of distribution. And this was a product that you especially loved, Scott. So why don't you tell people what Vetted does and also why it was it didn't quite make the cut?
Yeah, so when you want to buy something where you don't inherently know what the best one is, the best one for you, then what do? Well, you go to Amazon and you look at the product reviews, right? And so you do a search for something in Amazon and here come the product reviews. And you try to read through them. Some of them are spammy and some of them are just like, oh, you know, they didn't fix my product when I like a lot of really noisy stuff in there and not much signal. So it's hard to really figure out which is the best one. There's Amazon's choice. But above there, more and more these days are a bunch of advertised products. So I've given up on Amazon. I wish it didn't end up that way. It was so convenient before to just get the research results and then sort through the reviews when they were pretty much all signal. It's just, you know, it just isn't the case anymore. So that's why I believe Vetted was created. What they do is they spider into all of the independent review sites and pick the product that gets the best reviews from multiple sites and actually cites those reviews. So it sorts them based on, it's a lot like Rotten Tomatoes actually. So it's Rotten Tomatoes for kind of everything you ever wanted to buy instead of watch. And that to me is brilliant. And I thought, well, gosh, Rotten Tomatoes was kind of the winner that took most. So maybe this can be that too. But when you dig into it, it's hard to make the argument that this is going to be winner take most, at least not quickly, right? So it's not just that there's a network dynamic that we look for. It's that you can create enormous value quickly. And viral growth just doesn't seem to be there. This is a product you have to discover and use, and maybe a friend will tell you about it, but it's going to take a while. There's no really obvious way to acquire customers. And by the way, the business model is not obvious to me either. So a lot of challenges for this company to score well with us. It scored a 75 out of 80. So well below our threshold, not as far below as, you know, many companies we see that score in the 40s and 50s, but just really, you know, something that I sort of, when I used the product, I thought, aha, this is definitely going to score high. But when you actually do the discipline of scoring it, it was the distribution that knocked it down too far. It couldn't make up for that.
And this also ties in with the brilliant insight you had earlier, which again, people are hearing about live more or less, which is that this is not a product where increasing the product market fit is going to get it to the 80 mark, right? We already gave it a 9 out of 10 on product market fit. It is extremely easy to use, and people, we encourage you to go to Vetted and check it out and try it out. And I think it's a great product, but it really falls short on the distribution side because the fundamental issue is you don't have a bunch of people pushing Vetted. If you are a vendor, you don't necessarily want to link people to the Vetted content because when they go there, they're going to see all the alternatives and potentially the better alternatives. So unless you are the best product in the category, you don't want to show other people, your potential customers, all the other options they have. And so it just makes distribution challenging, but it does make it a great product. We recommend it to people who want to buy things.
It's really fun to use. And I should mention deal parameters here. It's a Series A that they got from Insight, $14 million Series A. And to get to the website, it's vetted.ai. So go there now. It's fun. And just type in, digital camera or type in bicycle and see what you get. It's really interesting to see how they've done their sorting and how complete their data set is. I loved it.
It's a clearly superior experience to the standard approach of either looking on Amazon or Googling. And it's just structured. It's well done. They've done a great job with it. It's just due to the nature of the business, we don't think that it is ultimately blitz scalable.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could Google best e-bikes and you'll get, you know, top 10 e-bikes, or, you know, you'll get some links to some sites that are helpful, but you have to look at all of them instead of just like the one website that sort of shows you the general sort of feeling on the different ones. And this one, the more experts picked this one as the best one. So it's a good experience. And I think it'll grow quickly. Next we have Spectral, which, you know how you have to like keep your credit score up when you're a consumer so that you can have access to financial products? Well, they're recreating that credit score in Web3. And Spectral is trying to, you know, have a similar 800 scale and essentially be the standard for creditworthiness in Web3. And that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. It's pretty cool, but it's pretty early. And the thing is, how do you get to be the only credit scoring option? Now, in the world of consumer credit, obviously Fair Isaac, the FICO score, eventually dominated. But it was not something that was clear was going to happen. And FICO dates back to the 1960s and 70s, remarkably enough. So it's long established and it's a slow burn to get there. Maybe the Web3 side will progress faster, maybe it won't. It's also the case that FICO is drawing on certain things like the credit score from the Equifax and Experian and the reports on your debt and so on and so forth. With Spectral, they're drawing on your wallet activity. Okay, that's pretty cool, but is that enough to actually judge someone's crypto credit worthiness? If all people have is they have stuff in their wallets, but you know, is that actually an accurate measure? There's so many wash sales and other things going on. It just feels like it's a bit early. And even though you can see the potential value down the line, if Spectral becomes the Fair Isaac of Web3, there is a lot of potential fallout along the way.
Well, and the other surprising thing about this company is that Andreessen did not lead it. This is a Web3 deal that it was not actually an Andreessen deal. It's General Catalyst that led the round. And it is, it doesn't say, it says, you know, it doesn't say if it was a Series A or a seed or whatever, but it's $23 million. So I assume it's an A at least. And it's got a bunch of other good investors. I think they must have some traction and must be getting somewhere. But the other question I have, Chris, is like, do you really need a separate credit worthiness score in Web3 versus what you, I mean, maybe you do, because I guess if all of your economic activity is in the crypto world, then the Fair Isaac score isn't going to really be a good evaluator of you as someone who's seeking credit.
That's right. I think that there is potential need, but is it going to be Spectral? Right, there's always a question. Yes, it is something that should exist, but is this the particular version of this that is going to ultimately win? And second, as I am fond of saying, you don't have to be wrong to lose money, you just have to be too early. And it's far from clear if we need a crypto credit score just yet.
Or when we'll need it. This is today a $0 billion market. So it's the credit worthiness. I don't know if it's zero, but it's close to $0 billion. The number of people that are willing to pay for a credit score on somebody they want to loan crypto to. I'm guessing that it's a very small market today, and someday it might be a very big market. And Chris, how do you think about that from a blitzscaling point of view? What sort of added risk is that in your mind? And does it disqualify a blitzscaler?
Well, I think that it boils down to some classic Reid Hoffman advice, which is, what is your investment thesis? Which is to say, what are the things that have to go right or that you have to be correct about in order for this to work? And you start to add it up for this, and it is that there's going to be a significant chunk of people for whom a crypto credit score is going to be more valuable and more useful in evaluating them than a traditional credit score. And it is that there's going to be enough crypto activity such that a crypto credit score will be comparable in value to a regular credit score, which, by the way, is based on all economic activity as opposed to just crypto blockchain economic activity. And when will we be to a point where crypto transactions are equivalent to non-crypto transactions? That could take a really long time. And that Spectral is the one that wins out. So as you start chaining together these, this has to be true in order for this to make sense, it starts to get into very low probability areas pretty quickly.
Yes, it's what Rick Frisbee called. Rick Frisbee was the founder of Battery Ventures once upon a time. And he called this kind of thing a multiple miracle deal. You know, if this miracle happens and this miracle and this miracle, then we have a huge business. And that gets into some pretty rare air and low probabilities, as you put it.
One miracle at a time. One miracle at a time.
Right. So those are the companies we wanted to talk about today. Chris, any general comments about the world we're living in right now as far as fundraising goes? What are you seeing?
As you can tell, the deal volume is down, the size of deals are down. This is a new landscape, as we've described. And I think we talked in a previous podcast about how we anticipate that this landscape will be the case for, you know, 4 or 5 quarters. And we're only 1 quarter into it so far. And so we've got a ways to go yet. And of course, remember, our analysis is based on announcements, which are trailing, so it won't be quite a year until we hit the quarterly mark in terms of real life. But it probably will be another year or so before we really see the uptick on this podcast. So this is the new reality. You got to adapt to it and adjust to it as best you can for now. Maybe it'll be different, which is why it's good that you subscribe and listen every month, because we're going to continue to monitor it very closely. But that being said, There's still tons of great companies, and we talked about, Incredible Health making it, Sphere almost making it, Vetted being a company where we really love their product. I mean, there's plenty of innovation going on out there. And from our perspective, innovation's on sale right now, and it's a great time to be an investor.
Yeah, I think there's an anecdote I'd like to bring up because it's very telling about exactly where we are, which is an entrepreneur who was lamenting the fact that his phone wasn't ringing off the hook saying, "Are you ready to raise? Are you ready to raise? Are you ready to raise?" Because the investors were chomping at the bit just for the opportunity to drop a term sheet on this company. Instead, he actually had to go out and have meetings. Imagine that. And he had to go out and meet 12 investors to get multiple term sheets. God forbid. So if you have a company that's performing well and in an exciting market, then there is absolutely investor appetite for that. It's not going to be as high a price as it was, and it's not going to be as big around maybe, but you're absolutely going to be able to raise capital. And we're not at a point in time at all like we were back in 2000, where the market froze entirely.
Yeah. And again, what that ultimately means is it's still a great time to start a company, even though there's a greater degree of difficulty. It's still a great time to invest in companies, even though there is uncertainty, because venture capital is venture capital. It's designed to be something where you take calculated risks, not where money just rolls in without work.
Yeah, and it's also true that the teachings of blitzscaling will lead you to some of the most exciting companies that are being created right now. And so all of what we're learning as we look at these companies is useful in decision making as to which companies you might want to back.
Well, hopefully we'll be back soon with our next month's podcast about the deals that were announced in September 2022. As you heard, the volume is probably going to be in that 80 something range, so similar to this month. But we're going to continue to watch these trends like a hawk because we are very eager to see which direction the market is going to turn.
As is everyone else. So thanks, Chris. Always good to talk to you.
Likewise, Scott and everyone else, as always, please do like, review, subscribe, tell your friends, and I hope that you've enjoyed this month's edition of Analyzing Blitz Scalable Venture Deals.